Hello and welcome to another episode of the Sisterhood Club podcast with myself, Georgie Hubbard.
And me, Pam Caldwell.
Today we have a very inspiring, motivating podcast for you. Pam and I sat down with Belinda Agnew, who I have followed now for a couple of years on LinkedIn. The content she puts out is extremely motivating, which is why I reached out to her. I thought, I want to get you on the podcast because I knew that she would just give some absolute nuggets of gold. Belinda's background is, I mean, what's it like, Pam? It's just incredibly inspiring how she's literally had to pretty much bring herself up and become the woman that she is today. We discuss how that's happened, her beliefs around success, what she believes it takes to be successful. It was just incredibly inspiring. Pam, what are you sort of looking forward to people listening to?
One thing that keeps coming up time and time again that I think is so important is that whole, the self-belief piece, the confidence piece and the mindset piece that it takes to really step up and into your own true potential. And I think what people will take away is a couple of golden nuggets as to how they can really get in the driving seat and carve their own career and life.
I completely agree. And Belinda's now invested in 7 companies. She is extremely bullish and passionate about technology, which we discuss. So strap in, enjoy today's podcast. And please, if you could take the time to subscribe, leave us a review. And, you know, if you love this podcast today, please share it. And I really hope you enjoy. Hello and welcome to the Sisterhood Club podcast, where we empower women with all the tools they need to succeed across life, business and career. We'll bring inspiring stories and practical advice from CEOs, founders and women who are achieving incredible things. So join us and let's shape our futures together. Belinda, amazing to have you on the Sisterhood Club podcast today. For those of you who do not follow you on LinkedIn, and for those that don't follow Belinda on LinkedIn, I highly recommend you do. Could you give a little bit of a background into yourself, your journey, and what brought you here today?
Yeah. So I don't know how, like, you want me to start my journey, because it's been such a lengthy one. But I would say a quick background of me would be somebody that's, I would even say, like a country girl giving it a go, for sure. So I came from a really small town of like literally 100 odd people. Wow. With like 2 shops. So I grew up with livestock, like on a farm, and moved to the city at the age of, I would say, 14, turning 15. Learned quickly the city life in about a year or two. And then from there, I moved into the city on my own, became super independent at the age of, I would say, 16, 17. Dropped out of school halfway year 10. Literally lived on my own ever since. And yeah, hustled in survival mode for a really long time, and found a love for tech about 5 years ago. And now I'm involved in really cool startups, even early stage to Series A. I get involved as a board member, advisor, or investor. I run a company called Xnabler. So my business partner, Prashant, he's the CTO tech head behind the business. And I'm more business marketing sales. But we run a team of about 75 staff full time, across the globe, everywhere. So India, Australia, USA, Europe, and growing. So I'm actually moving to USA in May. Move the team over there, which is really exciting. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Right. That's a lot in there, and there's a lot to unpack. The first thing that really stands out for me is how you grew up in this small town. You didn't maybe have exposure to business, corporates, tech. You know, you literally grew up on a farm, right? There's a lot of people that, you know, that would have just remained their life. What was it that made you want to get out of that sort of small town and really start to pave your own path in life? What drove that?
You know, I didn't really have a choice. And I think I talk about this in my solo episode as well. I talk about this often because I feel like for me, my situation and the circumstance I was in, I really didn't have a choice but to survive. So to survive, you have to go out on your own, find your own path, make money, to put food on the table, to put a roof over your head, pay rent, do all the things that, you know, people at the age of 16, 17 shouldn't really do. And from there, I feel I kind of found my love for entrepreneurship and an understanding that I was really good at it. And I think that's kind of how I got into it. I didn't really plan. I never, at a young age, I was really shy. I was like the shy girl in the corner that would like play with my hands constantly. I would always put my head down. I wouldn't say too much. I was bullied in school. Also bullied, you know, with my family growing up because I was, you know, European looking and all my family's like Australian, blue eyes, blonde hair. So I was like the real odd one out of everybody. So I'd never really thought I would be where I am today, to be fair. Mm-hmm. I had no idea what I was doing. I just survived.
I really love that, Belinda. It's amazing. Like, and I do love those stories when, you know, people have really had really tough or unimaginable childhoods, and that is just used as a fuel to push the life forward in a direction where they know that they can be. And, you know, I'd really like to unpack that. Like, we've mentioned the word survival and operating from a place of survival. And if we take lower demographic income families, okay, and those families that are really struggling to make ends meet, what I think is really sad is that within those communities or within those families, there's often real untapped potential. And when you are struggling to ends meet, you don't necessarily feel as though you're in a place where you're able to take risks and you're able to go out there, you're able to explore your creative flares and try different things. And I feel as though you've almost lived a huge life up until the age, I think it was 22, you mentioned in one of your podcasts that you really started to connect to your entrepreneurial flair. Now, coming from a place of survival, that's an amazing thing to be able to identify, like, I have got something here. So did you realize that entrepreneurial flair was what you had at that particular time? Like, what was that moment when you were 22? Because that's a really young age and you're obviously in such a unique situation at that time. Like, what made you think to yourself, I've got something?
I found a love and an understanding that I was really good at selling. Like, I literally could sell anything to anybody. Like, from door knocking, selling, you know, $3,500 Kirby vacuum cleaners to consumers. That was one of the best experiences I've ever had growing up. To call center, selling to, you know, packages, telco packages, education courses over the phone. I think that's when I really found that I was really good at that. And at that point, I was like, this is what I need to excel on. This is what I need to focus on. And I did that. And I obviously dabbled into education. I ran an education company for a while. And then I dabbled into recruitment. I ran a recruitment agency, which I still am a part of. And then from there, I fell into tech. So I think it wasn't necessarily an entrepreneur moment for me. It was just a moment where I was like, yes, this is what I'm really, really good at. And I'm going to just focus on that and excel in that, in whatever industry it was at the time.
Mm-hmm. I think sales is something that Pam and I always go back to, is that that is the lifeblood of your business. Mm-hmm. And I think what I've noticed, a lot of entrepreneurs always do come from some kind of sales background, whether it's knocking on doors, whether it's recruitment, whether it's a call center. That I think, is what teaches you resilience. And I believe that that is a skill that is needed so much in business. So you've obviously started a number of businesses. What do you think? And I always am just, I really would love to, if I could bottle up success, right? If I could sell success, like, what do you think are the ingredients that really do lead to success in life, business, and what's your experience been like, just from what you've sort of gone on that sort of journey?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I think it's different for a male and a female, because I'm, you know, for the last year and a half, I've really got to know the feminine and the masculine polarities and understand that a little bit more. And I think that's really important for women to learn that. Because we thrive in our feminine energy more so than in our masculine. Masculine energy is really hard work for us. It's like a chore that we need to do every single day to excel in our life, especially in business, not necessarily personal, but business. And that's just how it is, and that's how it goes. If you choose to have a career, that's what you have to do as a female. But I think what defines success for me as an overall, I would definitely say, you know, grit is kind of a thing that I've learned along the way. And I feel like if you don't have the grit to be able to constantly keep falling on your ass and getting back up and trying again, and then falling over again and then getting back up and doing it again, and having stuff happening in your personal life, it can also throw you off in your business and your success, and you start to doubt yourself and imposter syndrome. There's so many things and so many, you know, angles, or I guess, you know, situations that can throw you off in your life. And I think what makes somebody is grit, having the grit to constantly keep going no matter what. No matter what's happening in your life, you just got to keep going. And I think that's what really defines the person for success.
That's absolutely beautifully put there. Mm. And that mindset, that sheer determination and that grit, I also really do think are huge contributing factors to success. The one thing that Georgie and I have noticed with, and this is like sweeping generalizations, right? But we'll just call it out, right? With the females that we have engaged with, and we help a lot of people transition in careers, make career pivots, really, you know, transition companies. And the one thing that we do come back to time and time again is a confidence gap. And what I really love about what you mentioned earlier is that you realized you were really good at something. You were really good at sales, and you really connected to that, and you've applied it to every industry that you've ever had exposure to. And that's absolutely beautiful. And I think like there's a real alignment between confidence and self-belief. But what I genuinely feel is that when you can connect to being really good at something, I feel as though that can continue to help with the self-belief piece. And then in turn, if you feel that you can believe in yourself, that over time will help with your confidence. And I think when you come from a place of confidence and being confident in your own ability, that you then have what it takes to fall down and get back up and fall down and get back
100%.
Up. 100%. Yeah. And on that, I would be really interested to sort of hear, you've been involved in so much. And of course, in each business, there will have been, you know, real struggles and times where you have been knocked down and you've had to really drag yourself back up again. Like, could you sort of talk to us about some of the times that you've experienced in your career or your business where it has been really quite tough to get back up again and you've been knocked down, and what sort of gave you the ability to get up and keep going?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think for me, what gives me the grit is I've lived a really interesting life that I don't wish that any woman would go through the things that I went through. I think everybody has their own story, right? But I think for my journey, the way that I look at everything from where I came from, like, you know, I grew up in a housing commission, you know, my family on the dole, on Centrelink, having no real career, actually not even having a job or ever having to work or never worked. that, you know, literally lived on the government my whole life, and my upbringing was pretty intense, coming from like a single household mother that wasn't really stable, because she was really young. She was 17 when she had me, so I never really had like a father figure. I never had anybody to look up to for all my life, so I really only had myself to look up to. If anything happens, I mean, I have nobody to fall on. So I think for me, what pushes me is A, I don't have a choice, and B, I owe it to myself. Like the fact that I've come from such a, you know, interesting background, and obviously the upbringing and everything that I've gone through, I truly owe it to myself to be this person that I chose for myself and the life that I want. Not only lifestyle, but, you know, I want to teach other people that have come from similar upbringings from me that they can also do the same thing. They can also go out there and give it a go and, you know, and keep going no matter what, and having the grit to be able to get up every single day and have the motivation. And look, there are days where, I mean, all of us go through this, right? We have days where we're like, oh my God, this is just not what I want for my life. Like, what am I doing? This is so shit. And we have those days. We all, like, it's not positive. It's not sunflowers every single day. But I think knowing the direction and the roadmap that is there for you, and I guess I'm a very visual person and I have a really strong intuition, and I just know that it's going to be amazing. And I just know if I keep going and I keep putting in the work and keep putting in the hours and I keep showing up, I know that there's something there for me in the end, which I've actually roadmapped my whole like 10 years. And everything I've roadmapped has actually come true, which is interesting. So I do believe in, you know, manifestation and writing your goals down and, you know, and striving towards that. But I think that's what really wakes me up every day to know that I owe it to myself. I owe this life to myself. I've come this far. How far can I get? Like, what's the limit?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where is this going to go? So I think that's what it is.
That is so powerful. And I actually got chills when you were speaking, because I think there's a lot of people out there that would have come from your experience, the child, and that would have become their story, and it would have completely defined their life. I think you get two people in this world. One is always going to be the victim of like, why I'm in this position is because all of these things that happened in the past, and their past becomes their future.
Mm-hmm.
And they're literally repeating the same thing every single day. On the flip side of that, you have somebody that comes from a, you know, the same traumatic background, but has decided that they are the creator of their life, mm-hmm. and that their past doesn't determine their destiny, and that they are in the driver's seat of their life, and they have control of what they achieve and what they do. And that is you. And it's always fascinated me how you can get people from similar backgrounds. One will take a dark path and one will go off and achieve incredible 1,000%. Things, right? And what you've just said then about the power of manifestation, because I'm very much a big believer of that, and everything I've written down in my life of how I want my life to be and look has come into reality. Now, of course, I've taken massive action as well, but I think having a vision for the future that inspires you and gets you going every day is so important. So I'd love to get your sort of take on how you sort of go about that process, how you have mapped out the next 10 years for you, and what you believe, why do you believe visualization and manifestation is so important?
Well, I think it's like accountability. If we don't write our goals down, like, how are we ever going to keep ourselves accountable? It's like in work, like, we have post-its everywhere, or like a whiteboard. Like, why do we do that? Because if we write it down, we're going to hold ourselves accountable to do that task or whatever that is, right? So the reason why I do that is because I look back and I'm like, this is what I had written down. This is what I need to do. This is what I'm moving forward to. So what are the steps that I need to do in order to get there? So I think it's, you know, we, from my experience, there's no real time to take off. Like, this is kind of what I am put on this earth to do, and I'm just going to keep showing up until that's done, right? But you know, we're never content as entrepreneurs. We're always wanting more. We're always wanting, you know, the best thing and the next shiny thing. But I think if we have a roadmap and we write it down and we hold ourselves accountable to do those things, I definitely think that's super, super, super important. And going back to what you were saying, with the whole life journey and people going in different directions, and I think that's so true because my psychologist talks about this all the time. She was like, you could have gone to drugs or something really crazy, and you've chosen this to kind of get rid of the trauma, which is really interesting to me. And what came out of that is what you were saying is life, seriously, it happens for you, not to you. And I think everything that's happened in my life up until now is God has literally done this for me. And this is why I'm in the position that I'm in. I'm not a victim again. It's nothing's happening to me. It's happening for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you put yourself in that mindset and in that state, you will constantly always win and thrive to be the best version of yourself.
Mm, absolutely.
That's really beautiful. And I think one thing that I'm getting a real strong sense from you, Belinda, is that you are so comfortable with putting yourself in uncomfortable scenarios and just that real go-getter type attitude. And you had recently posted something that I specifically could relate to, and it was people always choose the safe option as opposed to the right option. And I thought, oh, ding, ding, I can relate to that because for many years, I very much found something that I was good at and I sat in that spot because I then felt I'm good at this. This is my place. And I felt very safe and I felt very comfortable. And I think like that is the case for a lot of people. And I thought, what a really interesting post. Could you sort of talk to that? Like, what do you mean by that? And how can we encourage other people to get comfortable with being uncomfortable?
Yeah, I think being in fear is a really good thing. And I think people...
I love it.
It's a great thing.
Yeah.
As much as humans, like it's in our nature not to put ourselves in these situations because it doesn't feel normal for us and it just doesn't allow us to be safe, especially for females, because we thrive off feeling safe and secure. And it's much harder for women to put themselves in an unsafe environment more than men. But I believe amazing things happen when you put yourself in fear. Truly amazing things happen with your life. And this isn't just in business or your work life, it's in your personal life too. I see so many women choosing the safe guy because they're stable, they're secure, they're, you know, have a lot of good traits happening for them, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're the right guy, because the right guy challenges you and puts you in fear sometimes and holds you accountable and says the things that you don't necessarily want to hear. But these are the things that, you know, where magical things happen. So I think there was a quote by, who was that guy, the investor guy, the white hair guy, he's like an investor, really big investor in USA. He said something, what's his name? He's like one of the biggest investors.
We'll Google it afterwards.
Yeah, we'll look it up. Anyway, he said something, a quote where he said, when people fear, that's when you be greedy. And when people are greedy, that's when you be fearful. And I think that relates to life. I think that's where what we need to think of, and that's how we need to, you know, feel about fear. But yeah, I definitely think being fearful is a good thing.
I completely agree. And I think it's all about, you know, I believe confidence is a skill. And I think it comes from when we put ourselves in positions that take courage to put ourselves in those positions. For example, Pam and I wouldn't say we love public speaking, but we put ourselves in some positions last year where we were on some panels and we were speaking in public. Again, shaking, sweaty palms, racing heart. But the amount of growth that came out of that and the amount of opportunities that came out of that was incredible. So again, another example of when I put myself out there and Pam put herself out there, came from a place of fear, good things happened. But I think one of the biggest fears that hold so many people back, and I think especially from a lot of the women I've been speaking to, is this fear of being judged, this fear of not being good enough, this fear of failing. How have you overcome that? Or maybe you haven't even overcome that. Maybe it's something that you still have to work on yourself. But when you feel that fear, how do you acknowledge it and go, you know, what's your process for dealing with fear? Because I think this is something that holds so many people back.
Yeah, it's such a good question because I feel like I still haven't nailed that.
Who has? And
as a woman, we are emotional creatures. So we're like this constantly, like a roller coaster. And we kind of need someone to direct us or lead us to the right way. If it's not the right way, then that's okay, but just direct us somewhere. But yeah, it's definitely something I'm still working on. I wouldn't say I'm confident at all. Like, I think there's so many things that I'm not confident in, but there's also so many things that I am. So I think it's just like a constant learning. It's a constant growth of trying to put myself in uncomfortable positions to be confident at that at some point. It's, mm-hmm. you know, chipping away at that. It's not going to happen overnight, and you're not going to be this, you know, overnight sensation, you know. It takes time and lessons and learnings and having the right people around you, the right support system and all of that. There's so many avenues to be confident. But I think the ultimate thing is you just need to start somewhere, at the things that you're not comfortable with, at the things that you're not confident with. Start there. I think it all just comes from, you know, putting yourself out there. Like you said, you know, the public speaking, you need to just do it. Say yes.
Yeah.
And just show up.
Correct.
And you know what? If you fuck it up, like, who cares? At least you showed up. At least you did it. At least you gave it a go. You know, and if it doesn't work, who cares? You gave it a go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we actually talk about that often. Yeah. It's just like, give it a try, get mm-hmm. out there, put yourself out there. What's the worst that can happen?
Yeah.
And we've sort of spoke about that before. It's about not having a plan B, but if this goes wrong, what's the worst case scenario? And quite often when you map that out, the worst case scenario really ain't that bad. You know, at the end of the day, when we're putting ourselves out there, we're not brain surgeons. Mm-hmm. If we drop the scalpel, you know, we're not going to kill someone, right? We drop the mouse on the floor. Okay, that's cool. Not a bad situation. I think it is just about putting yourself out there and really giving it a red hot go to make a difference. And if you're driven by like a mission and a vision and that sort of purpose, you're being purpose led, like absolutely just begin. And I think that's a really powerful message. If I could take the conversation in a bit of a different direction, because you are running a company at the moment, X Enabler, and you mentioned that you're now at the point where you have 75 employees, which is incredible. Now, we have a lot of women who are listening to our podcast from a careers angle as well. And for someone that is leading a business, like what advice would you give to women out there who are maybe not in tech at the moment, but considering a career in tech, or looking at what is going to secure their place in the future of work? What do you sort of see as, what would be your advice to women out there that are looking to sort of get into the industry?
Yeah. I hate giving fluff advice because I feel like I listen to so many podcasts or I listen to so many people asking questions and they don't really give direct answers. I feel like whoever's listening to this, if I give some kind of broad answer, they're going to be like, but what do I still do? Like, that doesn't make sense. Like, what? Tell me the steps, what I need to do. So what I would do if I was a woman and I knew I wanted to get into tech and that's what I wanted to do, I would literally go on LinkedIn, build a profile, you know, put your picture up, put whatever up you want on your banner to be known for. I would post every day for 30 days about topics in tech or topics about things that you want to be in. And I would connect with CEOs, founders of businesses that you wish to work at, or, you know, tech businesses, AI businesses, or what have you. And message directly, say, hey, I really love what your business is about and I really love what you guys are doing. I love the journey. I love everything about it. Can I intern, an unpaid intern with you for 3 months or 2 months or a month or whatever it is? I just want to learn about tech and I want to know if this is an industry I want to be in. I would start there. I would totally start there. Don't go and apply for jobs that are paid. I don't think that's the right avenue. If you have no experience, intern. Intern. If you're really serious about it, do unpaid internship. If you're very serious about it, you don't have responsibilities, do unpaid intern because it just puts you in a different position, especially when you finish your intern, people will hire you. I have so many interns that come on board with me all the time, every 6 weeks or so. And I hire them after, most of them anyway, because they gave it a go, you know? So I think you should definitely intern. I think that's underrated.
Mm-hmm. I think that's, you said something really important there as well, just about like, you know, putting yourself out there, creating a LinkedIn profile, sending 100 DMs or however many it takes to get a response, right? People don't take the right actions. They want to make a change in their life, but they just procrastinate or all this fear comes up and they don't end up taking action. So that's really powerful advice. Like keep on DMing until you get a response, right? And I think that Absolutely. Is just really powerful advice for people. For those women who have been in the workforce for a long time now, and we talk about this a lot about transferable skills. In your business right now, when you're hiring, what are some of the skills that you look for? Because I think what Pam and I are noticing from that more recruitment lens is that companies now are looking for that more of like those emotional skills, those softer skills, the negotiation, the communication, the empathy, all of those sort of emotional intelligence that perhaps wasn't really given much credit 10 years ago. When you come to hire, what are some of the skills that you look for from that more of a softer lens? And what do you think are some skills that could be transferable into a position in technology?
Yeah, I look for passion. I look for somebody that really has passion for the industry. I can't hire people. I've hired people that don't really understand the tech space, not really passionate about it, but just want to work for the brand. And I found that those people don't really work in the long term. People that do work are the people that are super passionate about the industry. So what I look for is definitely passion and the willingness to learn. And obviously curious as well, you know, stepping outside the box and being super curious about the space. But also on the flip side of that, from an employer, you need to give employees something to be passionate about. We can sit here and say, I want somebody passionate. I want somebody like this. But I mean, the employee needs something to be passionate about. So I think from both lenses, that's what I would say.
I feel like Pamela's asked the same question as me, but I'm just going to quickly get it in because it was just so fresh. But I think brand is really important. Like if you want to attract really good talent, your brand, what's your marketing messages? What are you sort of like, you know, pulling out to the world? I think that's something that you are very passionate about as well, is about your marketing, your brand. Obviously you've built an incredible brand on LinkedIn. For business owners listening to this that maybe are struggling to attract passionate, you know, good, great talent to their business, how important do you think that whole marketing and branding piece for a business is to attract great talent?
Oh my gosh, so important. Your budget, most of your budget should be going into marketing. This is something that we're doing at the moment. We're rebranding our whole design, our whole feel, our whole message is literally getting dropped this month. Like it's looking completely new and fresh. And I'm all about like my motto in my personal life and now it's business as well. If I didn't take a photo or a video, it never happened.
I love that.
and this is how I feel. Yeah, I feel like how am I going to share the experiences that I've been through or gone through, whether it's in business or personal, if I haven't shared it to the world? So I feel like that's how businesses should think. Like why do we want to work for you? Why should I come and work for you? So I think it's a constant I guess, roadmap of trying to figure out what message you want to show to the world and how you're going to go about showing that message, whether it's through content, like written content, video content, you know, podcasts, audio content, like you guys are doing now, building, you know, a brand. There's so many ways that you can do that. But I think businesses should be spending way more money in marketing than what they're currently doing. Not only just for themselves, for like selling, but also brand awareness, also attracting the right talent to you as well. And it's such a good feeling when people are messaging you saying, hey, I like really want to work for your brand. I love what you guys are doing. It's great.
It's so true. Yeah.
Absolutely. And if we can just like sort of hover over the sort of recruitment piece at the moment and the hiring piece, because that is our mission, right? We want to encourage as many females into the world of tech as possible for many different reasons, right? But I think it's such an appealing career choice for women financially. Flexibility wise, you know, you can operate remotely in some capacities. Like there's just so many beautiful synergies with what a female in tech can look like. And I would be really interested, Belinda, if you can sort of share personally, as a female, like what are the biggest challenges that you have experienced as a female in tech, a female tech entrepreneur, and how have you overcome them? But you can be completely honest.
We can be honest. There's no filter here.
I mean, look, I think before you think about, okay, I'm speaking to women, not men here. As a woman, I think you really need to think about why you want to get into tech, and how strong is that willingness to be in tech. Really, really think about that, because I'll be honest, it's extremely difficult for a woman to be in tech. Extremely difficult, but we have so much power in the same sense. So what I mean by that is there's not many women dominating in tech, which gives us a huge advantage because we're kind of like the unicorns in the tech space, and a lot of people want to work with us, especially if we're really good at it. I've found so there's tons of opportunities for women in tech because of that, because there's not many women giving it a go, or even putting themselves out there, I would say. Very minimal, but there's a lot of it's a very male dominant industry, which also comes with it's a little bit hard because you need to figure out whether they are taking you seriously in a sense of wanting to do business with you or wanting to date you. And that's the truth. So it's really trying to figure out how to filter through that, and also on the flip side of, you know, being taken seriously. So I think if you're very sensitive and you can be quite emotional and you don't take criticism well, you probably just need to figure out if that's something you really want to do, because it isn't for the type of person that doesn't handle criticism well or doesn't handle being not taken seriously, because it happens every day, even for me still. And I've been in the space for 5 years. So I think that's something you do need to consider. And especially if you are a woman that likes to take care of yourself physically, because men are obviously physically, they're very they think with their eyes, not their brain. So I think you just need to figure out, is that the angle that you want to go down as well? And I'm not trying to be negative here. It's just this is just the experience that I've been through, and what I've, you know, overcome. But I think you just need to constantly keep putting yourself out there until you find your right people. I've spoken about this many times on LinkedIn. You just need to constantly be authentic, be yourself 100%, and your people will end up finding you in the end. But, you know, really think about why you want to do tech.
Yeah, you've said some really, really important things there. And both Pam and I can absolutely relate to what you're saying, which is why we're now partnering with companies that we know have got those policies and diverse inclusion policies down pat. Because part of the problem when we were in running our recruitment company, and we still do that every single day, is that we would find a woman, we would place them in a business, and 3 months later they would go, it's a boys' club, I've got to get out of here, right? And it was just the most frustrating, but also most it used to upset me. I was like, what is going wrong here? So anyway, so that's why we sort of started to now reach out to companies that we know have got really great teams and have got diversity and inclusion policies and have got leaders that are very aware and just those more sort of inclusive hiring processes as well. But we are still unfortunately a long way off a lot of businesses being like that. Mm. And sadly, it's like, you're not alone when, you know, we can all speak from, I'm sure, experiences of where we've felt, you know, that we're the only women in a boardroom, for example. You know, the amount of meetings I used to go to when I was picking up a job description or a new job, and I'd always be meeting with men. And I just think that the thing is that it taught me a level of confidence. But I think going back to what you said earlier about this whole masculine and feminine, right? I came for many, many years from a very masculine energy. I thought to get ahead, I have to be in my masculine. I have to go to these meetings. I have to grind. I have to hustle. I have to present myself in a certain way. I didn't want to come in as too soft or too feminine because I knew that I was competing with 10 men to get this client on. So I came from a very masculine place. However, going back to what you were just saying before about being real and authentic, I also knew that that wasn't truly who I was. And what it caused me was quite a lot of anxiety, if I'm honest, quite a lot of mental health issues, because I was having to be somebody I wasn't in sales and business in order to get ahead. And now, that's why I loved your post about just be real. I have learned to just accept myself. I know who I am. And I know I can be very direct and very sort of like, Pam's very smiling here, but you know, just quite confident and assertive, but also know that it's coming from a place of good energy, not aggressive energy. That's been my personal journey. And I'd love to know like your journey around maybe your experience of how you sometimes felt in order to get a new client or start a business or do anything, you've had to kind of come from that sort of place of like masculine, and maybe how you've kind of navigated now into being your real authentic self and now standing in your power. So I'd love to sort of go through that journey.
Yeah. So there's two things in that. I believe that we still have to be somewhat in our masculine, if not mostly, to be really good at business and to thrive and dominate the spaces that we're in. And that's just a fact. It's, you know, women are created to procreate and support, nurture, and all of those things. We're not built to be the CEO and lead, you know, businesses and make really critical decisions, because we're emotional creatures. We're not logical. It's just it's our biological makeup. So I believe that if we want to be successful and we want to have those things, we need to be masculine. We need to have our masculine energy on. We need to put our masculine mask on to be able to, you know, show up in rooms with people that are masculine. But the flip side of that is it's so powerful for a woman, because we can get away with so much in the space, and I'm sure you girls can relate. And there's so many things that we can do. It's like, I think I did a post, it's women in the tech industry or women in corporate are literally magicians, because we're constantly trying to figure out the space and like working out, maneuvering our way through the tech industry. But in saying that, what I've found, you know, in the last 2 years is I don't necessarily try and compete and go head on head with businesses or people that I'm trying to do business with or partnerships that I'm trying to create. I literally just ask for help now. I was like, John, like, I've got this issue and I'd really like your help, versus saying, hey, John, this is what we should be doing and I really think this is a good idea, so I think that we should do this, so can you sign here? Like, it's the way that we come across as a female, and I feel as though females should stop being so aggressive and too masculine, because it doesn't work for us. What works for us is being feminine and being a woman and asking for help. It goes a really long way. I'm not saying act dumb and don't play to your strengths. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying just, you know, go about it in a way that would work better for you as a woman versus trying to put on that mask every day and compete with all these other men, because it's just not, it's not healthy for us.
Mm-hmm. No, correct. Well, I think it's being aware of the system that we're in. And it's playing the system.
Yeah.
That's how I've always thought it. It's like, I know that we're in a system, and things, you know, and it is challenging. It's a lot more challenging to be in business as a woman. Let's just call it as it is. But like you said, because there aren't as many women to men, we do have an advantage, and we can use our femininity as an advantage. And I think how you've just outlined that situation there of how to approach a situation like that, going for help, and the way you just said that was perfect and outlined in a way to sort of showcase that, okay, you can actually get the results you want in a whole other way. Because if a man went, hey, can you help? He's going to be like, no. But if a woman goes, hey, can you help? It's naturally in the men's biology to want to help a woman, right? So it's
Yeah. To help.
Yeah. I think it's so powerful.
An ego play.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. So it's like we can use the system that we're all in to our advantage. Uh-huh. And this is why I love having these conversations, because, you know, it's kind of like, you know, almost like you're sitting in our living room right now listening and getting some like some hot tips on how to like negotiate the corporate landscape, you know. So it's really, really powerful. And look, I think you said some really important things there, but, you know, I always think to myself, there will be a woman listening to this right now, and she's having a really challenging time in a male-dominated, you know, environment at work. She's really struggling, or she is, you know, just having a real tough time. To that woman right now, what would you say to her?
I think you are what you think. And I know that's so simple, but I feel as though, again, I'm not bashing feminists whatsoever, or feminine, like people that speak about the whole feminist movement and whatnot. But I feel like all these feminists get together and create these groups, and they all meet and they all bash men and the industry and complain. And you hear all these stories, which, you know, they're true. And I mean, it's sad, of course, but I believe you are what you think. And if you constantly are in that energy of thinking that poor me and victimizing yourself and playing the victim, then of course, like you're going to feel like that. And these things are going to consistently happen to you. It's patterns. And I feel like sometimes, and I'm speaking from experience, I was that person. I was the victim for many years. I was like, poor me. Why am I constantly getting hit on? Why is this happening? Why am I crying? Why am I getting bullied in a male dominant industry? What, like, why can't I be equal? Why can't they look at me with respect? Like, what's the issue here? Why is this happening? And then as soon as I changed my mindset of not being that poor Belinda and poor me and playing the victim, you know, things changed for me. And as simple as it sounds, it's true. You are what you think. So I think change the mindset of thinking poor you, and I guess, you know, switch that. And once that switches over time, you'll start to see, I guess, a better experience for you in the corporate industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would be my answer to that.
No, I think that's a phenomenal answer. And I think that's it. It's like, you know, you are what you think about every day, right? You know, and I do believe that what you put out is what you get back. And if you are going in every day thinking another tough day, guess what? It's going to be another tough day. Whereas you go in and go, I'm going to really make something of myself today. Today's going to be a great day. Guess what? Generally, you get good things happen to you. That's what I believe. I think that's just universal law. But one thing, like, I would just want to, I guess, as we come to the end of this podcast, I've obviously, you know, been following you. I've watched your post. You've been very sort of big on Web3 and sort of AI, and obviously with the rise of now ChatGPT, you know, it's really got a lot of people spooked about, oh, what's going to happen? What is the future going to look like? What's your personal opinion on, you know, the future of tech, and where do you think we're going to be in 10 years time? Are we going to be putting goggles on and going into the metaverse? Like, what do you think is going to happen over the next 10 years in tech?
I mean, it's your decision as humans. You make the decision whether you want to do that or not. I mean, I don't believe everybody's going to do it. I think there are going to be some people, not everyone. I think people think too much into things. They overthink a lot of things. I think just focus on dominating your space and what you do best. definitely implement AI. AI is a game changer in implementing that into your business. I definitely think AI is creating more jobs. I definitely think Web3 will create more jobs. It's not taking away jobs. It's just creating more jobs. And those more jobs that they're creating are not so shitty. So all the shitty jobs are going to AI, and all the great jobs that you really want to do are all going to humans. So I think you should just focus on that. Web3 itself, I believe it's a bit of... It was a bit of a hype for a while. I believe a lot of the Web3 startups or businesses that are trying to create things within Web3 and blockchain will be wiped out this year and next year. And a lot of the Web2 big brands will come in and start implementing real things within Web3 and blockchain. So I'm looking really forward to that. So I think it's a really exciting time for Web3 and blockchain in 2025 onwards, once it's all legalized for us to do in USA and Australia. But yeah, I would say AI is a game changer, and it definitely will create jobs, and humans will get into better jobs for sure.
Yeah, I completely agree. And just in terms of what's next for you, like obviously we've spoken about a lot about your past, your present. What does the next 10 years look like for you? You obviously mentioned you're going to be moving to the US. That's very exciting. So
yeah, I don't know for sure if I'm moving. I'm just a one-way ticket, and I'm kind of going to decide because I'm an emotional person. I'm a woman. So I'm feed up energy and I do what I feel. So if I feel like I want to stay, I definitely will. But if I feel like I want to come home, I'll come home. But yes, Europe, America happening. We'll see how that goes. And I think for the future, for me, I just want to start, keep building my businesses, keep thriving in that space. The goal is for me to become a full-time angel investor. I think I've spoken about this a couple times, where I can full-time invest into entrepreneurs that have really cool concepts and ideas in Web2 and Web3 and blockchain. So that's kind of the goal for me, for sure.
I love that. And I've just got to ask, because there might be some people going, oh, angel investor, I might reach out. What kind of businesses and what kind of like, what are you looking for when it comes to like, you know, people pitching and people coming to you, like just some advice? Because you might get bombarded after this with people going, hi, Belinda, I've got an idea. What do you think you're going to be looking for?
I have these meetings every week. I literally just had a meeting before you girls, a guy that's creating this HR tech app. I personally invest, and my friends that are around me that are angel investors full time, is people. I think it comes down to, I believe everybody has an awesome idea. We all have awesome ideas. No idea is bad. It's the people that create the idea and execute it to another level. So I invest into the people and the execution of that. So for me, I have to like the person. I have to believe in their ability to grow that business and to execute that business. So I always invest into the people. If the concept's great, they've got revenue, but I don't like the person, I wouldn't invest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's, I completely agree, because I think a lot of people come up with good ideas all the time. It's all in the execution. Mm-hmm. And
every idea's good.
Yeah, 100%.
Mm-hmm. And so again, reverse that. Execution, what do you need? Mindset, grit, determination, work ethic, ability to 1,000%. Know what it takes to be in the driving seat of your own life, ultimately.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And on that note, Belinda, where can we send people to find out more about you and all the incredible things that you're doing?
Yeah, LinkedIn is my main platform. So just Belinda Agnew, A-G-N-E-W. I also have like a personal website, which you can find me on. It's belindaagnew.com. I'm also on Instagram. There's so many fake accounts out there on Instagram. So please, it's just belindaagnew.eth. ETH. That's where you can find me.
Amazing.
Amazing. I'm gonna hit you a follow.
You've got another follower. Thank you so much, Belinda. It's been phenomenal interview, a phenomenal chat, and I look forward to following your journey. So thanks for coming on today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoy these episodes, the number one thing you can do to help us grow and keep spreading our mission and message is to hit the subscribe button. And if you have time, give us a quick rating. Appreciate each and every one of you who tune in every week. And we look forward to bringing you many more episodes this year. Take care.